Welcome to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to this special edition of the show today. I'm playing excerpts from a panel I moderated at the AFCEA Bethesda Health IT Day in October. The panelists were Todd Simpson, the CIO of the Food and Drug Administration, Ron Thompson, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology in the Office of Information and Technology at the Department of Veterans Affairs, Beth Killerin, the CIO of the Department of Health and Human Services, Robert Klopp, the CIO of the Social Security Administration, Karen Jackson, the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Andrea Norris, the Director of the Center for Information Technology and CIO at the National Institutes of Health. The FDA's Simpson leads off the show.
I think obviously cybersecurity is the forefront of what we do, especially, you know, when we're talking about exchanging PII across the internet and, you know, between devices and device providers. It's a kind of unexplored territory. There's a lot of work that needs to be done there. My cybersecurity problems are a little bit more direct than solving the policy issues surrounding medical devices. My cybersecurity problems were inherited. When I parachuted into the FDA, there was a full-blown audit already underway. It lasted for about 15 months. And the GAO came in and did an exhaustive discovery of basically everything on the network, and they came up with a fairly troubling report at the time, and we just basically just took the report for what it was. We accepted it, and there were a lot of fresh eyes on it at the time, me included, so there really wasn't a fight. It was more validating things that the new folks, including myself, had seen. And so we just dug in and started working on it as diligently as possible. And I get to kind of brag a little bit because the Energy and Commerce Committee came in and they were really aggressive after reading the report. They were really concerned. And we moved so quickly, and we moved in tandem with Energy and Commerce and turned them into partners along the way and really used their support to get more resources. And, of course, we had a lot of support from Beth and HHS and from leadership at FDA. And ENC was so concerned that they asked us to get with DHS and actually bring the U.S. CERT team back in and look at all of the reported incidences that we had over the last 3 to 5 years. And I think we had like 1,063 U.S. CERT reports, which is nothing real significant. I mean, it's about average. Anytime a user clicks on a link or gets infected with malware, we report that. So we had HHS come in and look at all of that stuff. Again, they sent in an NCATS team that did some penetration testing, some social engineering, and they also sent in their US CERT team that did a deep dive on all 15,000 of our endpoints. We came back, I think, with 3 infected laptops, some spyware or something that people had installed themselves. And we pretty much remedied that right away. At the end of it all, we've made significant progress on our security program. We've increased our spend from 2% up to about 10% of our IT-based budget. And the big thing that came out of the GAO report was 15 significant programmatic findings. They said if we didn't fix it, fix those programmatic shortcomings, that we would pretty much, you know, continue to risk the data as they saw it that industry was uploading and exchanging with us. Within 45 days, we had remedied 12 of the 15 programmatic recommendations, which pretty much took all of the oomph out of that report. To date, we've moved the ball down the field really quick. In fact, I think U.S. CERT actually told us that what we did in 45 days was what they had seen in 18 months at other agencies. So I'm really proud of that work, and it's not me, it's my team. I've got a new CISO, an acting CISO, Craig Taylor, who is just a phenomenal CISO, probably one of the best I've ever had. And between his leadership and his team and the rest of the organization, we've done some really great things. So I'm really proud of that. I just wanted to tell that story.
All right, so Todd, I'm going to take the one logical follow-up because I do my job as a reporter. It's always interesting when you hear CIOs talk about the increase in funding, but then the next question usually comes from Congress or GAO, what'd you get for the funding? So the remedies are good. How are you measuring success? And then I guess the related question is, how are you, since this is a CXO panel, working with your CFO, working with your commissioner, administrators, how did you kind of make that happen? Because if there's more money to be found, everybody wants some.
Right. So it was an ask. It was a new ask. I'm working with my team to find efficiencies inside. We have major interoperability issues and system duplication issues. And as we attack those issues, we're finding efficiencies. So in the out years, I plan to pay as much of that cyber bill as possible on my own. And I still want to eventually reduce the base budget, but we did have to ask. I am in a federated environment at the FDA, so the centers have their own budgets, and I have to rely on them. But as far as measuring it, it was actually really straightforward, because what we did with the GAO audit is we took it and we broke it down, and just every single vulnerability we turned into an action item. So we're actually watching. For example, we have 166 recommendations, not programmatic recommendations, just we think you need to write a policy about this. We think you need to tighten this up. And we had 87 weaknesses. And I think we're at about 65% on the weaknesses and about 70% on the recommendations. And, of course, 80% on the 12 to 15 programmatic recommendations. So I'm just watching the ticker. Every day I'm watching the remediation. And, you know, those last three programmatic recommendations, those are big ones, data loss prevention. So we're going back. It's a multi-million dollar ask. It's going to be something that's going to probably take the next year to resolve. But it's that law of diminishing returns. So we attacked the low-hanging fruit, but now we have some big programmatic recommendations that are still ahead.
All right, excellent. Ron from VA.
We had an access crisis about 2 years ago. We had a secretary come in that refocused the organization around what is important, and it's focused on the veterans first and foremost. And I want to discuss our transformational, as an organization, and our transformational changes within our Office of Information and Technology as well. So we're a principle-based organization, not focused on rules. We're focused on outcomes, not output. So that's the transformational change that the secretary put in place. And under the leadership of Assistant Secretary Council, we are revamping how OINT serves our veteran as well. We are focused on our key themes, and interesting enough, Todd, one of the key themes are stabilizing our material weakness. And we've had the material weakness for our department for a number of years now, close to 16 years. And it's something that we're focused on very thoroughly, so we'll get to that. We're looking at stabilizing our and streamlining our current processes as well as building out our future and new set of capabilities to drive a better output in the future. So part of what we're doing is starting with our Cloud First initiative to actually look at streamlining how we use our data within the VA, how we enable the data for our clinical purposes, for better results for our veterans for healthcare, how we enable the data to be shared outside of the organization. The cancer moonshot is one where we are sequencing our DNA of a million veterans with NIH, and hopefully, Andrew, we'd have a chance to talk, but hopefully we'll touch on that. So that's cross-agency collaboration where we intend to use our cloud capabilities to share the data. It's really cost prohibitive to stand up an instantiation or an instance that's in-house and then do a connection outside. So we'll be leveraging the cloud for that, de-identifying our veterans' PII data and PHI data, and using it to again drive better outcomes for treatment for our veterans. And that's not just for the veteran community. This is going to help health in general across the world. So we're very excited about that. So we just awarded a contract about 2 weeks ago for a cloud service broker. And what that's going to do is really look at the need within, the requirements within the VA, and look at if it can be placed in the cloud. And then use that cloud broker to determine what cloud services will come in. Todd mentioned security. Again, we have a dedicated team focused on our material weakness. We're making significant amount of progress this year and significant amount of progress next year to eliminate the material weakness for all of our systems within there. But the cloud is actually going to simplify the way we deliver our services to the veteran. We deliver our services to our internal customer. A lot of may know that we have 130 instances of Vista that are unique, that are actually tailored to a lot of locations and really a lot of customizations needed. So the complexity of securing 130 things versus fewer than 130 things, it's really, really complex. So that adds to how we secure and manage and make sure that we are building out what the future is going to look for us. So, we're looking to cloud to modernize our EHR as we go forward, to modernize all the capabilities and functionalities of that EHR moving forward. So Jason, that's something that...
I didn't know.
You didn't know.
I didn't know.
And
I'm
the
happy.
Transformation may be...
it's ongoing.
New as well, yes.
Yeah. real quick follow-up before we get to Beth. When you say cloud broker, so you're looking at private, public, hybrid, all of the above?
It's all the above. We'll focus on hybrid initially and then look at a public for the core IT. We will be focused on our core IT back office functions initially and then working with our research partners to put data out in the cloud as well. So shoring up the base is where the initial priority is. And then building out flexibility to interact with our other federal partners as well.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a panel I moderated at the recent FCA Bethesda Health IT Day. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome back to this special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today I'm playing excerpts from a panel I moderated at the FCA Bethesda Health IT Day in October. The panelists were Todd Simpson, the CIO of the Food and Drug Administration, Ron Thompson, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Technology in the Office of Information and Technology at the Veterans Affairs Department, Beth Killerin, the CIO of the Department of Health and Human Services, Rob Klopp, the CIO of the Social Security Administration, Karen Jackson, the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Andrea Norris, the Director of the Center for Information and Technology and CIO of the National Institutes of Health. Killerin from HHS leads off this segment by taking a slightly different slant when talking about her initiatives.
As the HHS CIO, I feel that my role is very different than the others that you see here. I am an innovation broker. What does that mean? That means that I partner them together with you. My job is to make sure that I set the vision and that I bring the right technology to the right organization that needs it. So that's what I'm trying to do. One of the things that we just finished, very happy and proud that all three of my colleagues here at the table supported, was the first ever HHS IT strategic plan. And that strategic plan allowed us to identify five goals that we're going to do across HHS. Cyber being one of them, interoperability, usability being another, making sure that we're looking at different kinds of capabilities, making sure that we're providing the right quality workforce for the challenges that we have ahead of us. Around the IT strategic plan, those are the goals that we've all accomplished. I really am excited that all of the organizations, all of our operating divisions, and the majority of our staff divisions put their time and effort into making this a departmental plan. And it had all of the things that each of them is doing from an individual mission perspective. But at the department level, where do we have commonality? Where do we have joined forces? But when we get down to the mission level, if I see that Todd is doing something that is phenomenal in one of our smaller organizations that may not have the resources, maybe that might be in our our ACL organization for Administration for Community Living. I try to partner them together. If I find a technology that someone has come to me and said, hey, this is the kind of thing that we're going to be doing and we're cutting edge here, and I know there's an organization that's going in that direction, that's what I do. From a departmental perspective, honestly, you know, that's my biggest goal and objective is to make sure that the department is meeting its mission needs and objectives. As a provider for the Office of the Secretary and the 14,000 people I serve, again, it's making sure that there's those technologies that can support that mission. As a primary goal, I'm not a primary provider. Mine is to make sure that the right organizations have those providers in place. But on the other side of that is one of the things that we are doing from an enterprise perspective versus is healthcare in ensuring that the cyber from the healthcare sector. So within the federal omnibus budget last year, last December, there was a requirement to have a healthcare sector for cyber. And so we are helping the organization interact across the healthcare sector and understand what the threats are across the sector and sharing that information. Again, it's a collaboration and a sharing of information so that we see threats and things that are hitting us, we can get that information out to you very quickly so that you can understand what those threats are and be able to prevent them, or if we see some things and some trends and some ways to mitigate those, we want to share them. We do the same thing across the department. So where we see folks like, such as FDA that are excelling in a particular area or CMS that's excelling in a particular area, how do we bring that information forward and share it across the department to make sure that lessons learned and innovation breakthroughs are where they need to be? And making sure that we aren't struggling with the same problem five times. Because if one of us has struggled, so I can tell you, for example, we struggled with putting email in the cloud, how do we make sure that that struggle that we had didn't happen to the next organization? So, for example, when we put in CMS, it was easy peasy, and we didn't have those same problems. But we don't want to have more than one trial or failure. It's okay to have problems the first time. We don't want to keep repeating history. So again, my role as a collaborator and communicator is to make sure I'm putting those right folks together. And when we have a challenge, and I've been very appreciative to my three colleagues in this room, when we have a challenge, it's putting the right people into the room and getting it solved quickly. My job is what I tell myself is the number one risk mitigator. How do I mitigate the risk of meeting the mission, mitigate the risk of the threats that we have, and how do we mitigate the operational performance impacts that those have? And if I can put innovation in place, if I can interact with the industry to bring technology into the right places, if I can set the right goals, I've done my job as a CIO by making sure that everyone around me is successful and have the technology and tools they need.
You can keep the microphone because you're lapel. I got a new one, so don't worry. Two quick follow-ups. Number one, I love the idea of your job as a risk mitigator. I think from a CIO perspective, who I talk to a lot, I think that's it's very refreshing in a good way. But two quick follow-ups. You have 900 people who want to do something for you. IT strategic plan, is it online? Is it publicly available?
Yeah, so we're right now making it 508 compliant, and it should be online within the next week or two. But it actually was signed by every CIO in the department, and I think that's the first time we've ever done that.
All right. And the other one is, what's the one thing that they should pay attention to from an industry perspective?
I mean, for healthcare, for me, I mean, I think this is a theme you've heard from me since the day I started. So cyber and privacy are my number one requirements and goals in technology. Because for me, if I make sure that we shift from a response and recover to a prevent, I'm doing my job as a risk mitigator. I need to shift our investments, and I need to shift our technology from, okay, I'm just waiting for the bad guy to come, and I know he's going to come, and then I'll be really quick to fix it. It's to think one ahead of them, and what technology can I do to make those barriers better, or to be able to understand the threat as it's emerging and respond accordingly.
Excellent. Rob Klopp from SSA.
Hi. I'm gonna talk. I don't know, if Beth is the risk mitigator, I'm probably the risk generator. You know, what I'm trying to do is see if I can't create a perspective that looks at least 5 years into the future. Because, you know, there's lots of talk about IT modernization, And I think that there's going to be funding that's going to come from Congress to the tune of billions of dollars to help us all do that. But I think that we need to have a perspective on what it means to be modern. And that perspective can't be just a slight increment over what we do today. SSA runs 60 million lines of COBOL code. So, you know, let's call that a 1968 Ford Fairlane. I could modernize to a 1992, you know, Hyundai, but I'm not sure that that's the modernization target I need. I think I need to be thinking about how I have am aiming towards the car that's going to be out in 5 or 6 years from now. And so what I want to do is sort of talk for a minute about flipping the IT modernization conversation away from the geeky infrastructure things like cloud and those things, which are critically important. I mean, they are the infrastructure that we modernize on top of, into thinking about the kinds of things that I think we have to be prepared for as we rewrite and rebuild these systems. I mean, you know, one of the things I will say, I've said before, that those of you who heard me speak, is I think that if your agency is 10, 15, 20 years behind the state of the art today, that technology is advancing so rapidly that you'll never be able to incrementally catch up. You will not be able to take a 20-year-old technology and try to incrementally catch up to technology that's moving away from you. What you're going to have to do is throw it out and start all over again. And I want you to think about what that means if you imagine the kinds of things that might be 5 years from now. So if we think right now, we think electronic medical records are really, really cool. But the reality is 5 years from now, the Internet of Things is going to cause electronic medical records to be really maybe a small part of where we get medical evidence from. It's going to be from your iWatches and other wearable devices. Everything's wired in the Internet of Things. And so I can learn lots and lots about the health of people, maybe because the iWatch specifically is designed to go, I mean, there's articles that say that they have technologies where they'll be able to put something in the iWatch that will cause it to vibrate at a frequency that will cause the molecules of your skin to separate just enough to get a drop of blood out, so they'll be actually able to do blood tests and you won't even know it or feel it. Those are the kinds of things that are coming. But imagine not so much that those kinds of magic things happen, but imagine that the activity monitor in here all of a sudden can allow you to make some determinations about the health of somebody at Social Security. You know, we have issues around determining whether somebody is disabled, but then we have also issues around trying to determine how that disability might be progressing. And it's things like activity monitors where I might get information that will help me figure that stuff out. So I have to build systems today that are capable of supporting not just some things that I might be able to imagine are coming. I have to build systems today that will expand and stretch and be elastic in ways that I maybe can't even imagine today.
So, Rob, my one follow-up on that is, as the cynic of the group, I guess, a little bit, how do you do that? Because you don't know what you don't know. So in 2005, if Todd was implementing something, he didn't know that the iPhone was coming. How would he say, well, I would make sure this system can work with the iPhone of the future that I don't know it's coming? So how do you do that from a CIO's perspective?
So I think the answer is that you think about an abstraction that says I need to capture information. Let's just stick with death. I need to capture information about the people that I'm interested in and understand whether or not they have died. What I need to do is have an abstraction layer that's capable of extending so that it can capture data from more and more and more sources, and it has built into it the ability to look at those sources and determine whether or not statistically I can determine whether that person's dead or not, not build systems that say I'm going to read from one source and that's where I get my determination from. I think that a modern system understands that there's places where I have to make a decision about a disability or a benefit, and today I make those decisions by providing a human being with a whole bunch of information. And what I focus on today, because if I'm not thinking way modern, is to get the best possible information in front of the human being so that they can make the determination as effectively as possible. But what I might do in the future is swap that decision-making vehicle out and put a machine learning algorithm in, maybe that makes the determination, but probably more likely that facilitates the human being making the determination. But I need to be able to just swap those big things in and out in order to be able to advance, because I don't know what machine learning thing is going to be available in 5 years. But I do know that if I lock something in today, I'm probably going to regret it 5 years from now.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a panel I moderated at a recent FCA Bethesda Health IT Day. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome back to this special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today I'm playing excerpts from a panel I moderated at the FCA Bethesda Health IT Day in October. The panelists were Todd Simpson, the CIO of the Food and Drug Administration, Ron Thompson, the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology in the Office of Information and Technology at the Veterans Affairs Department, Beth Killeran, the CIO at the Department of Health and Human Services, Rob Klopp, the CIO at the Social Security Administration, Karen Jackson, the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Andrea Norris, the Director of the Center for Information Technology and CIO at the National Institutes of Health. CMS's Jackson leads off this segment, bringing the only non-CIO perspective to the panel on innovation.
Let me tell you a little bit about why I'm here and why we are here. So in this hour that we are talking about innovation and IT modernization and effective program management, CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, will manage the outlay of just over $400 million. We put out through the Medicare-Medicaid program and the payments that we're making to health insurers just shy of $1 trillion annually. We engage with about 1.5 million providers who are healthcare providers who are delivering services to nearly 100 million Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries. And we are managing as a payer and as an overseer of healthcare quality the delivery of care to almost every American here. So we touch a lot of lives. And we are doing that off of a platform that is a combination of systems and technology that some of it we inherited from the Social Security Administration. We thank you for it. I hazard that we may have some code in our systems that's older than COBOL. In fact, I know that we do in some of our fee-for-service payment systems. And we have mandates to modernize and support the modernization and integration of care delivery for this incredibly important population that we all serve in the federal government. So how we make that work matters every day. And what I would say is that the linkage of program operations, Medicare, Medicaid, innovation, marketplace, with our IT partners, both in the room and on the stage, HHS, our sister Optivs, we share data, we share information, we share lessons. And it really helps us to operate effectively in this very complex environment. I've been here just for a few minutes, but I've been working for the Medicare program for almost 20 years, and I have watched and participated in the implementation of program expansions that have changed CMS. They've changed the way in which healthcare is delivered across the country. And CMS, as the nexus where the payment operations work, we have had to change with the changing delivery of healthcare. This last little piece of legislation that Congress passed a couple of years ago fundamentally changes the way in which most physicians and practitioners are reimbursed for the services that they provide really moves away from volume, paying for volume, to paying for value. What does that mean? It means that we are integrating the data that's coming in from those electronic health records that I would say most practitioners and clinicians really despise, to taking the information out of those records, making it possible for clinicians who don't use electronic health records for submitting information about the patients that they are receiving payment for, integrating that all into something that allows every clinician to register for value measures that we can then use to determine whether or not they're entitled to an additional incentive payment for providing better quality care. This is fundamental to the way in which healthcare services will be provided to Medicare beneficiaries and to Medicaid recipients. Making that work in the background when we are trying to integrate this very old platform with a more digitally driven platform that we're developing, that's the challenge that we're facing, and one that we are working pretty successfully with our partners, both on the government side and in the private sector, to deliver. The other thing that I would say is CMS, as an agency and as a supplier of services over the last 5 years with the implementation of the health insurance marketplace, we're almost bipolar in terms of our platform and environment. Marketplace, the FFM, and the work that we're doing with state-based marketplaces, we have the good fortune of using pretty new technology, and it works pretty well. But that has to marry up with the work that is done in other parts of the agency and in other parts of the healthcare environment. And that's the challenge that we are facing and one that we're very excited about in terms of solving for the future.
One quick follow-up that occurred to me. Now, as the Deputy Chief Operating Officer at CMS, when your CIO, your tech folks come to you or you get that kind of call to say, hey, we want to invest or we want to modernize, or what are you looking for from the perch where you sit, from a, because you're not just saying, well, is that good technology or bad technology, or even what Rob's thinking about, which is, okay, this is great for today, but where are we going to be in 3, 5, 7 years? What's your kind of viewpoint from a tech perspective?
That's a really good question. And, of course, one of the things that we always have to be watching for is what are the resources that we have available to us, and are we able to establish in the near term and the long term what the return on investment is going to be? I would also say that The largest focus that we give to any kind of technology investment is what it means for the experience that a practitioner, a clinician who wants to be able to deliver care, to make sure that the beneficiary who is in front of them, with whom they have a relationship, that they are able to do that without interruption. And so we're really trying to think about this in terms of the clinician's experience in interacting with their patient and also with CMS as a payer and regulator.
We have to take a break. You're listening to a panel I moderated at the recent Bethesda Health IT Day. I'm Jason Miller, and this is Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. You are listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome back to this special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today I'm playing excerpts from a panel I moderated at the FCA Bethesda Health IT Day in October. The panelists were Todd Simpson, the CIO of the FDA, Ron Thompson, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information and Technology at the Veterans Affairs Department, Beth Killerin, the CIO at the Department of Health and Human Services, Rob Klopp, the CIO at the Social Security Administration, Karen Jackson, the Deputy Chief Operating Officer for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and Andrea Norris, the Director of the Center for Information Technology and CIO at the National Institutes of Health. NIH's Norris leads off this final segment discussing how data is changing the nature and potential of health IT.
We are very focused on several large programs that are both benefiting from the ability to use technology, current technology, emerging technology, to help us with this big data tsunami in biomedical research data. And we have started a new program, relatively new program, called Big Data to Knowledge, where we are investing in both the development of tools, techniques, standards, approaches that will help facilitate the analysis, capture analysis, and use of this data, and also to try out these methods and approaches in real life, in real studies. You've heard mentioned the Precision Medicine Initiative. We are in partnership with VA and FDA and others. This is just such an exciting program that we couldn't have done even 5 years ago. So a longitudinal study of including 1 million people to capture their electronic health record data, their mobile device and sensor data, medical device data, genomic data, and study and track that with people as participants, as partners in that activity over decades, to look across these data types and begin to start to do more rigorous analysis that allows more precise treatment for you in your environment with your genetic makeup, with the genetic makeup of the tumor or issue that you have. We've seen incredible progress in the cancer, certain types of lung cancers in this area, and we expect this to be really game-changing impact on the health of people. But if you think about it from a technology perspective, we're having to integrate data from health-providing organizations, non-interoperable electronic health record systems, the mobile device and sensors that we don't even exist yet in some cases, and genomic data. And so the technology challenges are enormous on this. That how do you plan for it, prepare for it, analyze it, structure it, capture it, and assure the privacy and security of participants' data? Because our studies and surveys have found people are very willing to contribute their data in such a way. The percent is very high in the studies we've done. But there has to be that assurance of privacy and security and appropriate use. And so that's a really key area of attention on that. We also have the BRAIN Initiative. We have 100 billion cells in your brain and 100 trillion connections. And just studying that, the first few years of that program is largely focused on technology and the technology development and tools and application of that so that we can begin to study that enormous set of data. And much like the human genome, this will be multi-year activity that is critically dependent on technology and technology capabilities. The third area that I wanted to mention, of course, is our Cancer Moonshot. This has been sponsored, announced by the White House, led by Vice President Biden. We're working, again, in collaboration and partnership with many, many players. But it's an amazing data-rich, data-dependent, technology-dependent activity that we are generating. We've done the cancer cloud pilots. which has been a wonderful experience where we're taking three very different approaches to look at how we can study and process and store and provide support to researchers for incredibly large volumes of genomic data. And now the Cancer Genome Cloud that will have even more data types. One of our principles that we are really struggling with is how to make sure this data is fair, findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. These sound very straightforward, but the complexity of actually achieving these principles and what are often very large, disparate data sets that are resident in places all around the world, and certainly in our country at medical centers, universities, and on various locations, is really quite challenging. And so this is one that we are investing tremendous amounts of leadership and research attention with the broad research environment and with partnership with industry, because that is the only way we're going to achieve this.
You went through a bunch of different initiatives. I'm excited about all of them, but I'm going to go back to the data to knowledge. Uh-huh. Just give us a quick update of where you're at with that. It sounds like a lot of data analytics, data tools. Just give us a little bit more, and then
yes,
we'll come to your questions.
So we've made many awards to centers and both individual researchers. We're seeing some really promising technologies and capabilities coming out for indexing. The finding, the data, it is enormous. We estimate, rough estimate, there's about 650 petabytes of data that NIH alone is funding. Finding it, working with a variety of different standards, and I spent all day yesterday with the highest levels of NIH leadership working on technology-related issues with big data and how over the next few years, what's our mixture of solved pilot, how much do we need to do? How will we coordinate that? How will we measure the results of that and assure we're making progress in these things? Because these are very complex issues. And so the Big Data to Knowledge program is more the research side of data science in a variety of different questions and challenges. And then we're also moving forward with these large data sets in cancer, in heart, in environmental, children's and impact of environmental issues on children in our precision medicine, and applying and learning from those. So it's very synergistic as we move forward, and keeping that program coupled with our a disease and health-centric programs is very critical.
I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO, sponsored by Symantec on federalnewsradio.com and 1500.